you believe. Assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener, because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live right now. Call 1-800-313-9443. Welcome, everybody. I wanted to get right to it and read something to you. This is called The Gun is Civilization by Major L. Clodhill, U.S. Marine Corps retired. Human beings have only two ways to deal with one another, reason and force. If you want me to do something for you, you have a choice of either convincing me via argument or force me to do your bidding under threat of force. Every human interaction falls into one of these two categories without exception, reason or force, that is. In a truly moral and civilized society, people exclusively interact through persuasion. Force has no place as a valid method of social interaction, and the only thing that removes force from the menu is the personal firearm, as paradoxical as that may sound to some. When I carry a gun, you cannot deal with me by force. You have to use reason and try to persuade me, because I have a way to negate your threat or employment of force. The gun is the only personal weapon that puts a 100-pound woman on equal footing with a 220-pound mugger, a 75-year-old retiree on equal footing with a 19-year-old gangbanger, and a single guy on equal footing with a truckload of drunk guys with baseball bats. The gun removes the disparity in physical strength, size, or numbers between a potential attacker and the defender. There are plenty of people who consider the gun as the source of bad force equations. These are the people who think that we'd be more civilized if all guns were removed from society because a firearm makes it easier for an armed mugger to do his job. That, of course, is only true if the mugger's potential victims are mostly disarmed, either by choice or by legislative fiat. It has no validity when most of a mugger's potential's marks are armed. People who argue for the banning of arms ask for automatic rule by the young, the strong, and the many, and that's the exact opposite of a civilized society. A mugger, even an armed one, can only make a successful living in a society where the state has granted him a force monopoly. Then there's the argument that the gun makes confrontations lethal that otherwise would only result in injury. This argument is fallacious in several ways. Without guns involved, confrontations are won by the physically superior party inflicting overwhelming injury on the loser. People who think that fists, bats, sticks, or stones don't constitute lethal force watch too much TV, where people take beatings and come out with only a bloody lip at the worst. The fact that the gun makes lethal force easier works solely in favor of the weaker defender, not the stronger attacker. If both are armed, the field is level. The gun is the only weapon that's as lethal in the hands of an octogenarian as it in the hands of a weightlifter. It simply wouldn't work as well as a force equalizer if it was both lethal and easily employable. When I carry a gun, I don't do so because I'm looking for a fight, but because I'm looking to be left alone. The gun at my side means that I cannot be forced, only persuaded. I don't carry it because I'm afraid, but because it enables me to be unafraid. It doesn't limit the actions of those who would interact with me through reason, only the actions of those who would do so by force. It removes force from the equation, and that's why I carry a gun. It's a civilized act. So the greatest civilization is one where all citizens are equally armed and can only be persuaded, never forced. There are two primary choices in life: accept conditions as they exist or accept responsibility for changing them. Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed.
2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
Welcome back from the break. Now, we have spoken in the past on this show about the Handgun Combat Master Skills Test. And the Handgun Combat Master's Test is one that was brought up. It was derived back in 1981 by a fellow by the name of Chuck Taylor. Now, prior to that, in the 70s and right up into the very, very early 80s, prior to this test, there was a lot of people out there who were referring to themselves in magazines and articles and whatnot as handgun masters. So Chuck sat down with a group of ultra-high-end instructors that he had brought up under his tutelage, and they decided to quantify what the hell a handgun master was. So they came up with a test. It's an 80-round test known as the Handgun Combat Master Skills Test. And it is the absolute ultimate in speed and accuracy in being able to bring the gun out and shoot very accurately, very fast. For instance, you've got to shoot a single shot into a head box area on a standard size target. And this head box is like 3 by 4 inches or so. And you've got to get it out of the holster and take that shot at 7 yards, 21 feet, in 1.2 seconds is the time that Chuck has for this test. Now, here's the way it works. Chuck is the original handgun combat master. Anybody that he certified as a master can then go out and run the test for others, and they can certify more people as masters as long as the test holds true. In that effect, through this trickle-down area, there's roughly somewhere between 50 and 60 handgun combat masters in the world. Chuck himself has certified 43. The most recent one was just late last month. Happens to be a very close personal friend of mine here in the studio. Chuck Taylor's handgun master number 43, somewhere around number 54, 55, 56 or so in the world, Justin Campbell. Justin, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you.
Glad to have you. Now, Justin, tell me, what is it that you do for a living?
I'm basically a full-time range master at a front sight.
Nice. And tell us about some of the things that you range master out there.
I range master every handgun course, including the handgun combat master prep and the instructor development courses.
Very nice. Very nice. Some of the things I used to do back in the day when I was affiliated with Front Sight as a staff member. Now, folks, I've known Justin for, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years, whatever it may be. And the first time I met Justin was the second class that he took out at Front Sight. Justin, talk with us a little bit about that.
Okay, the second class I took was a handgun combat master prep course. First class, of course, was a four-day defensive handgun. But I figured it's time to move on, so I wanted a higher echelon of training. But the handgun combat master prep met you, shot with some amazing shooters, and really fell in love with the idea of this test.
That's right. Now, there's in the handgun combat master prep course at Front Sight, there's actually 4 different tests that are shot. And of all the tests shot, I think there's a total of 7 or 8 tests that are shot in a 4-day period. You start with that 4-day defensive handgun test from the initial class as a pre-qual to make sure you should be in there. Moving on with the intermediate test, then the advanced test, then the handgun combat master's test, which is shot a few times. So I remember quite vividly your experience on the advanced test, the one just below the master's test. Remember that?
Yes, I do.
All right, tell us about it.
Okay, it was the second class I've taken. We've built up our skill set. At each level, folks, you learn another set of skills that's required for that skills test. So we shoot the advanced test, which has just about all the components of the handgun combat master test, minus a few like the odd angles, hostages, and the ambidextrous drill. Of course, at a bit slower speed, but still blindingly fast to most shooters.
Right.
And the first time I stepped up and took the test, I scored a 90% or better.
Very nice. Now, that means, in Front Sight terms, a distinguished graduate, 90% or better. And, folks, I've run that course out at Front Sight for about 4 years, virtually every time it was offered, with a couple of exceptions when I was assigned to other duties. And I got to tell you, to have a first-time participant in the master's course shoot 90% or better at the advanced level is a very rare occasion. And not only did that happen for you, Justin, but that was only your second class at Front Sight. And keep in mind, You have to shoot 90% or better in the four-day class and that test in order to even pre-qualify to get into the master's class. And that is a rare feat on top of itself. So very well done.
Well, thank you very much.
Now, this last month in March, on the 25th and 26th, there was a group of us that shot 2 days with Chuck Taylor in his combat master course that he offers. And, boy, that was a good time, wasn't it?
Oh, we had so much fun.
Yeah, there was, what, 10 or 11 of us or so, something like that?
Nine from the core group.
Okay. And all of us good friends. As a matter of fact, another guy who had already been certified as a master out at Frontsight, Don Benfield, great guy.
Right.
And we shot this test two times on the 25th, two times on the 26th, and you passed on which test?
The third test, the first test on March 26th.
That's right. And what is the other little special occasion of the 26th?
What made it extra special was my sister's birthday.
Right, Kim.
That's right.
And she was there.
Not only was she there, but she put the whole program together for us.
Yeah, and you know what? That's right. She did. And what an excellent time, man. I got to tell you, we had a blast. The night before, getting off the master's test, the night before the group of us, I don't know, 9 or 10, and plus a couple other guests, we can't tell you all of the antics of that, but we all went out to a decent steak restaurant and celebrated Kim's birthday and We had a couple of drinks and we had we had a good time. We celebrated Kim's birthday in very fine fashion. This is something that probably none of us will ever forget. I got to tell you, to get a bunch of guys and ladies that go out and we all shoot together, quite honestly, and it's, I don't know, it might sound a little arrogant to say, but at the highest echelon of the defensive shooting, for the most part, in the free world. I mean, we had some of the finest defensive shooters in the world at that table that night, and it was a pleasure to be around everybody, a bunch of cool people, and just to cut up, be out of town a little bit. We were in Bakersfield, California, and man, that was a blast, wasn't it?
We definitely blew off some steam and had some fun.
So anyhow, we then the next morning we go out to shoot, and even though we had a lot of fun, I mean, heck, I was in bed like 9 that night. I was wiped out.
Yeah, same here. Yeah. But you were my roommate.
That's right. That's right. So we ended up going out the next day. And what time did we start that test? About 10:30 or so?
Probably about 10:30.
So
we finished right at lunch.
It takes about an hour and a half. Now, not only is there 80 rounds to shoot, but then after that, you have to do malfunction and reload clearances. There's a type 1 malfunction, type 2, type 3, a tactical reload, and then a speed or emergency reload, depending on what terminology you want to use. And you have to do each one of those 5 times after all the shooting's done. And you've got to do it right and on time, or you stand to lose points. There's no way to make up points, right?
That's correct.
So tell us a little bit about your trip through that test where you got served. First of all, tell us about the equipment you're using.
All right, the equipment. The weapon I was using was a Nighthawk Customs Predator.
Nice.
Phenomenal 1911. I've handled a lot of 1911s, shot a lot of 1911s. I really like the customer service and the quality of the product that Nighthawk puts out.
Now, you, a lot like I, are kind of a recovering Glockaholic, right?
That's correct. I've had 6 or 7 at a time.
I still probably have 5 or 6 of them. I've only got a couple of 1911s, but that's what I shoot. You know, I carry my Glocks. I shoot them. I stay tuned up. They're great for concealed carry, but, man, it's tough to get away from the trigger and just, I guess, the finesse needed and kind of the relationship you build with your 1911s.
Well, there's definitely a relationship. Unlike a Glock where you can abuse it and throw it in a dishwasher if you want to, you've got to take care of your 1911. Have to take care of the weapon. And so, you know, I fell in love with the 1911 after using it for 2 days during a skill builder class out at Frontsight. And just the feel in my hand, the ergonomics, the way it points, and that trigger system, there was no going back for me. I was addicted the first time I launched rounds downrange.
As a matter of fact, I remember that skill builder class. I took the weekend off as well. We shot that together with a couple other guys, and if I remember right, we got in a little bit of trouble with the operations manager at the time for cutting up just a bit much.
Yes, we let our hair down. If I had any, that's what I would have done, and had a little bit of fun.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Justin and I were out having dinner and a couple of little medicinal purpose cocktails last night. I don't know what the medicine reason was for. I don't think we were suffering for anything, but I think we were catching up. It's a good time. Okay, so walk us through. We got, you know, a couple, 2-3 minutes left. Walk us through a little bit about the test, the actual master's test. We shot it. By the way, I got to tell you, folks, it was great. I actually was standing next to Justin. We were shooting next to each other for these 2 solid days. And we were both in the hunt for a while until I blew it with about, I don't know, 12 or 15 rounds to go. Jay, you were still in the hunt. Tell us about your test.
Okay. Well, the test opens up with what we call the school drills, or control pairs, from basically 0 yards to 50 yards. I finished that drill up. They did the counting on the misses and periffs, and I just had one slight periff, so I was down three, which was phenomenal for me. I'm usually down about 9 or 12. So I was going into the rest of the test on a high. And then at that point, I just had to stay focused and truly focus on that one shot at a time.
Yeah, you know, and I've heard you articulate it, as well as myself, some others, that it's not an 80-round test. It's a one-round test repeated 80 times.
Correct. Absolutely.
All right. So carry on. Now, I mean, you're getting into the test. Things are starting to feel good. Then how's it going?
Right. So I'm, not to sound arrogant, but I kind of cruise through the center portion, which most people that are in a hunt do. And then we enter the hard portion, like the ambi drill, which is actually pretty easy in components, but Murphy's Law says something's going to go wrong. It's going to go wrong in that drill.
Tell us, when did you know you were in the hunt and this was in the bag?
Going in the hostage rescue shots.
So I was 20 rounds to go.
Correct. I was comfortable.
60 rounds downrange.
I was comfortable.
Nice.
But knowing I couldn't get let down, I had to stay focused.
And focus you did stay. I remember that quite well.
And it was difficult because I felt rude. I just had to focus on what I was doing. When we had downtime, I just walked away and did what I had to do.
Nice. Well, I got to tell you, man, absolutely congratulations. A pleasure to be there. Man, did we have fun, didn't we?
Oh, it was phenomenal. It was phenomenal.
Matter of fact, I'm going to be out shooting sometime, I think, tomorrow morning with a couple of guys. I think you got to work, however.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, I want to thank Justin for sitting in. We've got more to come for the rest of the show, so stick around. We'll have more after the break. Justin, thanks very much.
Thanks, Bill.
All right, take care.
Irresponsible people have no business owning a gun or listening to this show. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
All right, guys, welcome back again. That was great to have Justin in. Okay, now I'm going to read for you something from the very anti-gun Democratic senator from New Jersey by the name of Frank Lautenberg. Yeah, a lot of doom and gloom right there. Frank Lautenberg has put together this proposal to close the gun show loophole. Let me, I've explained that before. What that is where you can go to a gun show, and if you're a private citizen, you can bring your own guns and sell them to other private citizens. Like, you could park your car on a street corner and put a for sale sign on it. Somebody else could buy it. You don't need any government regulation. So this is a very, very slanted article. Let me read this to you. Several high-ranking senators, led by Frank Lautenberg of New Jersey, on Tuesday relaunched their push to require gun sellers to conduct background checks on purchasers of all types of guns at state gun shows. On the heels of the 10-year anniversary of the Columbine shootings, the lawmakers pushed to close the gun show loophole that exists in more than 30 states. So, of course, they're throwing the whole Columbine thing in there. Wait, it gets better. The states do not require personal gun sellers who are authorized to hawk their own firearms at gun shows to conduct a background check on buyers of the guns. This allows people with the criminal histories to easily obtain weapons like those used in the Columbine killings, according to lawmakers. You like how that's all sanded? So it says that, you know, felons can come there and buy guns to, you know, shoot up more schools is what they're how they're trying to draw this. Measures similar to Lautenberg's bill have passed the Senate twice before but have failed to pass in the House because of pressure from gun lobbying organizations like the NRA, said Lautenberg, who was joined Tuesday by Senators Dianne Feinstein, of course, and Jack Reed, of course. There is no rational reason to oppose closing the loophole, said Lautenberg, the bill's sponsor. The reason it's still not closed is simple, the continuing power of the special interest gun lobbies in Washington. Okay. Now, we're going to pause in that story here. I'm going to give you a little bit of a rational reason. No government entity whatsoever, from the municipality, the county, the state, the federal, or even the friggin' United Nations, nobody can pass a law that can tell me I cannot do private commerce with my own stuff. That is actually a right given to us within the Constitution of the United States. So I can take whatever I own, and I can sell it, gift it, or I can buy it and and obtain it from other people, so long as we're agreeable. You cannot legislate what it is that I own. You can't legislate the process in which I dispose of my property. Unless, of course, it's something like a toxic chemical or something. But as an individual, I'd have no reason for that. I'd have to have permission to obtain that to begin with. So you cannot legislate that. So how about that is a rational reason? All right? Cars. I don't need to go through a background check to sell a car. I could sell a car to somebody who had their license suspended for DUI. I can sell them a car. There's nothing that says they can't own a car. Something that says they can't shoot a car. Now, there's already laws on the books that say these guys cannot buy firearms. They're not going to go to the average Joe citizen at a gun store to buy a firearm. Part of the reason? We as good, honest, law-abiding citizens who go to gun shows and such don't sell guns to turds that we see, to people of ill character that we might meet. It's pretty easy to tell somebody who's there for an other than lawful purpose. Okay? That's just, it's a thing called intuition, Senator. And obviously you don't have too much of it because you're trying to pass through a bill that's already failed twice. And it's not just because of some gun lobby. And by the way, the gun lobby is working on behalf of those of us who are gun owners. It goes so far as the people in the House decided, yeah, you know, this isn't quite right. So take a hint, take a page of history. Your ill-conceived measure has failed twice. Do you want to be a loser three times in a row? Are you that hell-bent on losing and looking stupid because you keep wasting the time of the U.S. Senate? Well, if that's your goal, then carry on because you're doing pretty good, buddy. The NRA strongly opposes requiring background checks on the personal sale of firearms, saying that such mandates could extend into gun deals that take place in the homes of Americans, which would infringe on the gun rights spelled out in the Second Amendment. Hear ye, they would. The NRA also said that guns used in crimes like those in the killings of Virginia Tech nearly 2 years ago are not usually purchased at gun shows. Here's the deal. The vast majority of guns used in crimes, especially when it comes to mass shootings, have generally been obtained illegally. Not always. The other ones are people who've had them generally for some time, and they snap. That's why you and I need to carry guns. So at the instant these people snap and bring the gun out for a malicious act, well, that's when we get to shoot them and stop them so that innocent people do not die. That's why an armed society is a polite society. If these guys are going out there hell-bent to wreak havoc by bringing out guns and shooting a bunch of people who are out there, if they know a lot of people in the area are armed, they're going to be a little less inclined to go out there and do these things. We already read a report, I think it was last week, that shows quite dramatically that an armed society, when there's a mass shooting in its act, and the citizens are allowed to have guns, the victim tally is half. If this guy would have shot 10 people, if there were no guns in society, with guns in society, he'd only end up with 5. So we can't really stop these hell-bent, crazed maniacs from doing their deed, but we can stop them by pumping some hot lead into their chest. More when we return.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Rule 1, assume it's loaded. Rule 2, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule 3, listen to the 2A radio show with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443.
Okay, so continuing on with this story from Lautenberg. Lautenberg called on his colleagues to support this gun show loophole closing ill-conceived bill, which he plans to introduce this week, but said he wasn't thinking about whether or not it stands a better chance of passing this year. But gun control advocates with the Brady campaign herald President Obama as a strong ally to getting the measure passed and signed into law this year. Now, in case you knuckleheads at the Brady campaign didn't know this, President Obama is the head of the executive branch. He is not a part of the legislative branch. Congress, the Senate, the House of Representatives combined, are known as Congress. That's the legislative branch. They work in a different field of government than President Obama. Just so you guys understand that, Ed Brady. All right? You've got the legislative branch, which makes the laws. Then you've got the executive branch, where Obama is, that enforces the laws. Then you have the judicial branch, which interprets the laws. So I just want the people in the Brady campaign to understand this. It sounds as though they may not. For the last 8 years, we haven't had anyone in the White House who supported this, said Paul Helmke, the group's president. That's Brady campaign. The president supports it. Senator John McCain of Arizona has supported it. It makes sense. We already do background checks at other gun sales. We ought to do this one. Get this done. Okay. Great. Good for you guys. And good for John McCain towing the leftist part of the right-wing line. Thanks, John. John was really the lesser of two evils when it came to the presidential candidates this last time, but certainly not what we were looking for. I got to tell you, I heard this said to me by a good friend of mine. As a matter of fact, it's the guy that does the voiceovers with my intros coming into the segments. Greg said to me during the campaigning of last year before the presidential election, he said, you know, it's odd that in this country, in this day and age, that Barack Obama is the mainstream candidate, and that Ron Paul is the kind of, how did he put it, the fringe candidate. Ron Paul's the fringe candidate, and Barack Obama's the mainstream. He says that just doesn't jive with the way America was built, and I couldn't agree more. Attorney General Eric Holder also faced with an increasing debate on reinstating a ban on assault weapons, has not actively addressed the gun show loopholes. There are issues that we'll have to discuss, Eric Holder said on CBS 2 weeks ago. The president will be the one who will ultimately set policy, things that are politically stable and things that are ultimately going to be effective. Lautenberg on Tuesday also said that by tightening requirements for personal gun sellers at gun shows, law enforcement officials could more closely track firearms and possibly curb the number of weapons used by drug cartels in Mexico. You have got to be kidding me. Listen to this. 30% of the guns that go to Mexico are bought at gun shows, he said. We don't know whether they're bought from unlicensed dealers, but logic would say let's have some idea of who it is that bought these guns, with their intentions and what their intentions might be. Now, nobody has ever come out of the ATF, the people actually tracking these guns, and said where they came from. So Lautenberg just stood up and lied and created this. I heard a statistic. It was funny one time. Something like 86.4% of all statistics are made up on the spot. I found that to be pretty funny. 30% of the guns that go to Mexico are bought at gun shows. Okay, you know what? That's misleading. That's fraud. Lautenberg, citizen's arrest, you're going in. And you're going to have that rap on your head. As a matter of fact, if you're convicted of fraud, I believe that is a felony. So hook yourself up, turn yourself in, so I don't have to fly to D.C. and do it myself. You lying, misleading, fraudulent jackass. You do not deserve to represent anybody if you're going to stand up and lie and push your own personal agenda. You don't deserve that. And quite honestly, America's in the mood to take things back. And we're taking back your position. We're gonna give you to somebody else. Let's get somebody from New Jersey to do that. One of his constituents to contact him and let him know by the letter of the law this was fraud by this statement because you haven't provided the facts to back it up. I'm going to give you, you know, whatever it is, like 5 business days, 1 week, to come up with those facts to back it up, or you'll be subject to citizen's arrest by me, your constituent in New Jersey. So let's have somebody look that up and do that. It's best to come from a constituent. All right, so that would be lots of fun. I want to read something to you, and this kind of caveats upon what we read in the first segment. It says, Give It to Them Straight by John Ross, author of Unintended Consequences. The biggest mistake we make is failing to take the moral high ground on our issue and letting our enemies define the terms. So these are typical statements made by anti-gunners, typical statements made by pro-gunners, And then probably what pro gunners ought to actually say. They would say, we'd be better off if no one had a gun. We say, you can never succeed at that. Criminals will always get guns. The flaw is the implication here is that if you could succeed, it would be a reasonable plan, when in fact it's not. What we should say. So, you want to institute a system where the weak and the elderly at the mercy of the strong, the lone, are at the mercy of the gang. You want to give violent criminals a government guarantee that citizens are disarmed. So that's unacceptable. Better that we should require every citizen to carry a gun. Here's another. Those assault rifles have no sporting purpose. You don't need a 30-round magazine for deer hunting. They're only for killing people. Here's the common response to that. I compete in DCM high power with my AR-15. You need a large capacity magazine for these courses of fire. My SKS is a fine deer rifle, and I've never done anything with my government to give my government reason not to trust me, blah, blah, blah. Here's the flaw. You have implicitly conceded that it's okay to ban a gun with no sporting use, and eventually they can replace your sporting arms with arcade game substitutes. What we should say instead, your claim that they're only for killing people is imprecise. A gas chamber or electric chair is designed for killing people, and those devices obviously serve different functions than guns. To be precise, a high-capacity military-type rifle or handgun is designed for conflict. When I need to protect myself for my freedom, I want the most reliable, most durable, highest-capacity weapon possible. The only thing hunting and target shooting have to do with freedom is that they're good practice. Here's another argument from the anti-gunners. If we pass this CCW law, it will be like the Wild West, with shootouts all the time for fender benders and bars, etc. We need to keep guns off the street. If doing so saves just one life, it will be worth it. We say, studies have shown, blah, 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 blah. Right? The flaw. You have implied that if studies showed CCW laws equaled more heat of passion shootings, CCW would be illegal. Here's what we should say. Although no state has experienced what you are describing, that's not important. What's important is our freedom. If saving lives is more important than anything else, why don't we throw out the Fifth Amendment? We have the technology to administer an annual truth serum session to the entire population. We'd catch the criminals, and mistaken arrest would be a thing of the past. How does that sound? Right? Here's another thing that you would hear from the anti-gunners. I don't see what the big deal is about a five-day waiting period. We say, it doesn't do any good, criminals don't wait 5 days, it's a waste of resources, blah, blah, blah. Here's the flaw. You have implied that if waiting periods did reduce crime, they'd be a good idea. Here's what we should say. How about a 24-hour cooling-off period with a government review board before the news is reported? Wouldn't that prevent lives from being ruined, e.g. Richard Jewell? And the fact that this law applies to people who already own a handgun tells me that it's not about crime prevention, it's about harassment. Personally, I want to live in a free society, not a safe one with the government as chief nanny. Here's another one. They say, in 1776, citizens had muskets. No one ever envisioned these deadly AK-47s. I suppose you think we should have atomic bombs. We say, generally make something up from there. Here's a better response. We should say, actually, the founders discussed this very issue. It's the Federalist Papers. They wanted the citizens to have the same guns as were issued weapons of soldiers and a modern infantry. Soldiers in 1776 were each issued muskets, but not large field pieces with exploding shells. In 1996, soldiers were issued M16s and M249s, etc., but not howitzers and atomic bombs. Furthermore, according to your logic, the laws governing freedom of the press are only valid for newspapers whose presses are hand-operated and used fixed type. After all, no one in 1776 foresaw offset printing or electricity, let alone TV and satellite transmission. They say, we require licenses on cars, but the powerful NRA screams bloody murder if anyone suggests licensing these weapons of mass destruction. Have you noticed that? A lot of the anti-gunners refer to guns as weapons of mass destruction now. Imagine that. We say usually nothing and just kind of sit there trying to figure out what to say. Here's what we should say. You know, driving is a luxury where firearms ownership is a right secured by the Constitution. But let's put that aside for a moment. It's interesting you compare guns to and vehicles. Here in the U.S., you can, at any age, go into any state and buy as many motorcycles, cars, and trucks of any size you want. And you don't need to do anything if you don't use them on public property. If you do want to use them on public property, you can get a license at age 16. This license is good in all 50 states, no waiting periods, no background checks, nothing. If we treated guns like cars, a 14-year-old could go into any state and legally buy handguns, machine guns, cannons, whatever, cash and carry, and shoot them all with complete legality on private property. At age 16, he could get a state license good anywhere in the country to shoot these guns on public property. Final comment, useful with most all arguments. You would say, you know, I'm amazed at how little you care about your grandchildren. I would have thought they meant more to you. They say, huh? Right? When trying to feed it back to them. Here's what you should say. Well, passing this proposal won't have a big immediate effect. I mean, in the next couple of years, neither Bill Clinton nor Newt Gingrich is going to open up internment camps like Roosevelt did 50 years ago. Of course, this is, we're dating ourselves a little bit. Now we could say Barack Obama and Nancy Pelosi. But think of your worst nightmare of a political leader. Isn't it possible that a person like that might be in control here sometime in the next 30, 40, or 50 years with 51% of the Congress and 51% of the Senate behind him? We'll talk about that in a second. If that does happen, do you really want your grandchildren to have been stripped of their final guarantee of freedom? And do you really want them to have been stripped of it by you? A little bit better argument. Let's talk a little bit about this. Too many people don't seem to understand this. Up on Capitol Hill, you have two houses of Congress. You have the House of Representatives, you have the Senate. This is actually written goofy. A lot of people refer to the House of Representatives as Congress. Congress is one word used to describe both houses, the upper house, the Senate, and the lower house, the House of Representatives. Both together are Congress. This actually shows that misnomer. Congress is both houses. It's commonly mistakenly referred to when people say Congress. They will mistakenly refer to the House of Representatives as Congress, when in fact it is the House of Representatives with the Senate added in. So everybody understands that. Too many people don't seem to. Okay, we're going to switch gears just a little bit. I have had a number of emails and even a couple of phone calls on the show and conversations that people have had with me about Glenn Beck. They don't seem to be happy with Glenn Beck. They say that Glenn Beck's just a mouthpiece. He's not really this pro-Second Amendment guy, even though his show, he moved from the very left-wing CNN to Fox this year, which is more conservative. And they say, you know, Fox is faux conservative. It's Fox, F-A-U-X, and Glenn Beck is just a mouthpiece, and he's really not the Second Amendment guy. Here's my take on it. You people that are such naysayers need to shut the hell up. And if I just offended a good portion of my audience, then good. I've got your attention. Now listen. Whether you believe Glenn Beck has ulterior motives in this or not, let me tell you what he is doing. He has the largest national platform for pro-gunners. And he's doing this on pretty much a regular daily basis, bringing the good word to the people. Other outlets that we do not have in major media. We get 1 hour a day on television in the form of Glenn Beck. We have a couple of other guys that occasionally bring something up. Now keep in mind, 2020 just did a huge slam piece for an entire hour, all their segments, but one small piece, an homage to a fallen reporter. On, I think it was April 11th. So Glenn Beck is out there doing his best to change these things around. Whether you agree with Glenn Beck personally or not, he is helping to lead this positive charge. And in solidarity, we will win. You may have heard that before. The unions used it. It's a very excellent political statement as well. In solidarity, we will win. That's how the gun ban went through in 94. That's how we're going to keep it from happening now. So for those of you who get online or send emails around in bulk fashion and start slamming Glenn Beck, you need to knock it off. Because this guy is using his platform, whether you agree with the form of the platform or not, the message is being received. On Sunday, this last Sunday, got a message from my good buddy. And he says, hey, you got to turn on Fox News because Glenn Beck is doing this thing at the Alamo. And I looked it up. Sure enough, you got Glenn Beck, you've got Ted Nugent there and in San Antonio, Texas, and they are at the Alamo and they're having this big Second Amendment rally, this pro-gun rally. They're going over the whole Tea Party thing. It's kind of a belated Tea Party and Second Amendment deal. And I got to tell you, that is what we need. That's the coverage we need. So you keep slamming Glenn Beck. He's going to change his programming. And that is not what we want. That is not what we need. We need to support Glenn in what he does. If you disagree with me, you know what? Too bad. I don't even want to hear your phone calls, and I could really care less about your emails. This is something I feel very passionate on. If you disagree with me, fine. Disagree, and disagree quietly. You can disagree loudly with somebody else who's actually going to pay attention. I won't even bother. He is leading the charge. That's like somebody who is pro-gun but doesn't like my word, doesn't like the show that I've got, doesn't like 2A Radio. That's ridiculous because I'm spreading the good word. Glenn Beck is spreading the good word. You might disagree with how he does it or maybe something he's done in the past. Too bad. He's online now, and let him be that way and carry this on. That's the best news outlet we have right now. Because I tell you what, he's got a lot more viewers than I've got listeners, and I support the guy. More when we return from the break.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
Okay, guys, I want to bring up something known as, which is starting to really get a momentum. It's known as Red Fridays. Now, Red Fridays is essentially on Friday, you would wear red in support of the members of the United States military who are overseas fighting. Now, you may not agree with why we're there or what we're doing, but the actual individuals in uniforms who are carrying out their orders and putting their lives on the line for the mission that this country has overseas, this is to support them until all those troops are brought home. Red Fridays. Let me read you just a little thing. I have no idea whether this is confirmable or not. It might be on Snopes, but I'm going to read you this letter. Last week, I was in Atlanta, Georgia, attending a conference. While I was at the airport returning home, I heard several people behind me beginning to clap and cheer. I immediately turned around and witnessed one of the greatest acts of patriotism I've ever seen. Moving through the terminal was a group of soldiers in their camos. They'd begun heading to their gate. Everyone, almost, was abruptly stood up on their feet with their hands waving and cheering. When I saw the soldier, probably 30 or 40 of them, being applauded and cheered for, it hit me. I'm not alone. I'm not the only red-blooded American who still loves this country and supports our troops and their families. Of course, I immediately stopped and began clapping for these young unsung heroes who are putting their lives on the line every day so we can go to school, work, and home without fear of reprisal. Just when I thought I could not be more proud of my country or our servicemen and women, a young girl, not born 6 or 7, ran up to one of the male soldiers. He kneeled down and said, "Hi." The little girl asked him if he would give something to her daddy for her. The young soldier, who didn't look any older than maybe 22 himself, said he would try, and what did she want to give her daddy? Then suddenly the little girl grabbed his neck of the soldier and gave him the biggest hug she could muster and kissed him on the cheek. The mother, little girl, who said her daughter's name was Courtney, told the young soldier about her husband. He was a Marine and had been in Iraq for 11 months now. And the mom was explaining how much her daughter Courtney missed her father. The young soldier began to tear up. When this temporarily single mom was done explaining her situation, all of the soldiers huddled together for a brief second. Then one of the other servicemen pulled out a military-looking walkie-talkie. They started playing with the device and talking back and forth on it. After about 10 to 15 seconds of this, the young soldier walked back over to Courtney, bent down, and said to her, I spoke to your daddy, and he told me to give you this. He then hugged his little girl and that he had just met and gave her a kiss on the cheek. He finished by saying, your daddy told me to tell you he loves you more than anything, and he's coming home very soon. The mom at this point was crying, almost uncontrollably, as the soldier stood to his feet, saluted Courtney and her mom, and was standing not more than 6 feet away from me the entire event. The soldier began to leave, heading towards their gate. People resumed their applause as I stood there applauding and looking around. There were very few dry eyes, including my own. That young soldier, in one last act of selflessness, turned around and blew a kiss to Courtney, a tear rolling down her cheek. We need to remember every day that the soldiers are their families and thank God for them and their sacrifices. At the end of the day, it's good to be an American. Red Fridays, guys. Every Friday, wear a red shirt, hat, ball cap. Wear your goofy red golf pants. Wear something. Thanks so much for your time today. I appreciate it. I'll be back tomorrow. I look forward to your emails.
Bill will be here tomorrow.
Will your freedoms? The Two-Way Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.